listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio, proudly brought to you by D-Link. Last week on Tech Talk Radio, we reported the imminent demise of Adobe's Flash. Late last week, Microsoft announced that its new Internet Explorer 9 browser wouldn't support Adobe's Flash either, in what seemed to be a major move towards HTML5, the newest incarnation of code that brings websites to your browser. Writing in Microsoft's IE blog, Dean Hachmovich, general manager of Microsoft's Internet Explorer arm, weighs in on the Flash debate, echoing some of the arguments put forth by Apple CEO Steve Jobs in his much-discussed Thoughts of Flash essay, which can be found on the Apple website. In the past week, Microsoft has clarified its stance on supporting Flash in IE9, explaining that it will continue to offer support for the software as a plugin, as it has always done. Dean also went on to say that the future of the web is HTML5, and many assumed that Microsoft was dropping Flash support in the browser. However, the company has since noted that it had never natively supported Flash in IE9, but instead had done so through plugins. Hachmovich posted a follow-up blog post addressing numerous comments, including those seeking reassurance over Microsoft's position on Flash. He explained several comments asked about Microsoft's support in Flash plugins, like Flash and Silverlight. Of course, IE9 will continue to support Flash and other plugins. Plugins are important for delivering innovation and functionality ahead of standards. For web browsers, developers can continue to offer plugins so that web pages can play video using these codecs on Windows. For example, web pages will still play VC1, which is Microsoft's WMV files in IE9. However, Hachmovich also added that uncertainty in the industry over web standards for video meant that Microsoft will stick with its plans to deliver video through HTML5. H.264 video offers a more certain path than other video formats and does so in a way that delivers a great HTML5 experience for developers and end users. Microsoft's refusal to support Flash as a native element of its browser will still be a sore point for Adobe as it tries to stamp its authority on the web video market. In a turn for the better this week, Adobe has fought back at Apple's crusade against it by showing off what Flash can do on a rival to the iPad, an Android-based tablet from Google. While Apple has banned its customers from using Flash, Adobe was showing punters at the Web 2.0 Expo in San Francisco last week what Flash looked like on upcoming Android-based tablets. Adobe's chief technical officer, Kevin Lynch, has slammed Apple's policy on Flash as anti-competitive and anti-internet. So while Flash may have pulled through the near-death experience this week, there's still going to be a rough road ahead as the Apple juggernaut rolls out 1 million iPads a month, as well as countless iPhones.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Net filter circumvention is completely legal. Adobe CTO Kevin Lynch delivers harsh criticism at the Web 2.0 Expo. Government claims the NBN will pay itself off. iPad traffic is 10% non-US. And Google Latitude actually proving popular. And also we talked to Sandrina Branton, Senior Sales Manager for BMC Software, about women in IT. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, an implementation study declares the NBN viable with or without Telstra. Apple sets an Australian arrival date for the iPad. Adobe responds to criticism of Flash, and new hope in the search for the black box belonging to Air France flight AF447. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A report released last week by McKinsey and KPMG has found that Labor's national broadband network is financially viable with or without the cooperation of Telstra. The $25 million implementation study has answered many questions which have been raised by telecommunications analysts and industry experts. The study recommended that the fibre-based national broadband network be implemented as a public utility rather than a commercial concern, which could then be sold for an estimated $40 billion. And in more good news for the government, McKinsey KPMG found that the entire NBN could be built for a measly $26 billion with Telstra's cooperation, or $38 billion without, instead of the original projected $43 billion. In a press conference last week, Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, said that the NBN was the largest infrastructure project in Australia's history, and added that it was not an overnight solution, neither was it a quick fix for an election. Senator Conroy said that his preferred option was to have Telstra included in the NBN, making its infrastructure available to NBNco.
Clearly, we have not reached an agreement with them at this stage. I wouldn't imagine that we could keep talking through to the end of the year. I wouldn't imagine we could keep talking through to the end of June. At some point, you've got to make a decision. Either we're going to get there or we're not.
Telstra did not comment on the McKinsey KPMG report or the government's announcement last week. Apple enthusiasts, listen up, be sure to circle the 28th of May. That's when the iPad will officially be launched in Australia. The three Wi-Fi and three 3G models will all be available from the outset, with prices including GST ranging from $629 for a 16GB Wi-Fi only model to $1,049 for a 64GB Wi-Fi and 3G model. Australians will also have access to Apple's iBook store, with titles available for immediate download. The device will also go on sale in Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Spain, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. Apple has sold 1 million iPads in just 28 days, and many of these have been traded internationally on the so-called grey market. Apple expects the grey market to diminish significantly with official launches outside of the United States. Apple says that customers can pre-order all iPad models from Apple's online store in all 9 countries beginning from Monday the 10th of May. Software developer Adobe has hit back at criticism from Apple and Microsoft levelled at its Flash product last week. Adobe's chief executive, Mr. Shantanu Narayen, has defended Flash software and the developers who build it. Mr. Narayen gave a video interview to the Wall Street Journal last week, saying the technology company had a very different view of the world to Apple. Mr. Narayen said that consumers should decide which technology worked best for them. Mr. Narayen also said Adobe's view of the world is multi-platform. The video from Adobe's CEO was in response to recent scathing criticism from Apple's Steve Jobs, who described Flash as closed, unreliable, and ill-suited to mobile devices. Then, in a rare show of solidarity, Microsoft's general manager for Internet Explorer development, Mr. Dean Hakimovich, announced that the yet-to-be-released IE9 will not support Flash, in favour of native HTML5 video support. Adobe makes many of today's most popular software development tools, including Flash and Photoshop and Dreamweaver. And the black box flight recorder belonging to Air France AF447, which disappeared over the Atlantic on the 1st of June last year, may well have been located. A French official said last week that the search area has now been narrowed from 1,500 square kilometres to just 3 to 5 square kilometres, but warned that the flight recorder itself might never be found. A French Navy spokesman told AFP that it's like trying to find a shoebox in an area the size of Paris at a depth of 3,000 metres and in a terrain as rugged as the Alps. The cause of the crash is still unknown, and while the plane's airspeed probes had given false readings, officials believe other factors must also have contributed. All 228 people on board the flights from Rio de Janeiro to Paris died in the crash. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Ionet have just assimilated Netspace into the Borg.
Cool. Does the department ever expect the blacklist to exceed this number of URLs?
Which doesn't answer the question.
How does $3,005 grab
you? Whoa!
This has got a whack of zero, this
correct
control.
Talk about spatial aircraft.
How can news always be free?
You've got two incredibly large companies saying we're not supporting a product. Maybe that's the end of Flash.
If you're using satellite for your internet, you've got a very long lag time.
There are a few token gestures out there, but there should be more, in my opinion. But anyway,
yes. Yeah, for some reason, it wouldn't load up on my phone.
What Flash?
But we've got people who currently can't get any decent speeds.
I haven't been to Groggle, and I don't need to go to Groggle to form that opinion.
You tweeted it.
Me? Don't point at me in that tone of voice.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Good evening, iPad viewers, listeners, wherever you might happen to be. I've just spent half an hour trying to change my name on the online chatty thing. But anyway, I've done it. Hello, everybody.
You can do it now.
It works.
It was auto-correcting the command and was capitalizing.
Oh, don't you? It's like predictive text.
Yeah, that's what it was doing to you.
Doing some really bizarre things. But anyway, we got there in the end. Yes, what an interesting week it's been. And we've seen Microsoft change camps or change opinions, I guess, with Adobe Flash. So we've got a bit more about that this evening. We've seen the iPad coming up. And Dr. Ron, I'm excited. Your website of the week this week is...
I gave you a sneak preview about...
To coin the vernacular, I'm not going to say that word on air, but it's something tearing.
It's a
rip-snorter.
It's a pearl-a-tearer.
And if you... It is. If you actually like music and you miss Pandora, this one is for you. So you just wait. It's good. It continues on like the other one used to before it got IP blocked to Australia. And it plays music at you. So you just off it goes. Really, really good. But anyway,
you're going to have to wait 2 hours,
have to
though.
Wait 2 hours for that. Won't be long the way we go, but anyway. JD's in this evening. Hello, JD.
Greetings, everyone.
What's news? Anything exciting?
What's news? No. 28th of May. Sounds
pretty
exciting.
It is pretty exciting.
For those who haven't gone in the grey market.
We were just, or even those who have travelled to the United States for that matter. 11% dearer than over there.
Really?
What
are you talking about?
We're talking about these paddy things, iPads.
Oh, the iPads. Pads.
Yeah, get your pad here.
So it's going to be released in Australia on the 28th of May.
Yes.
Cool.
So still you can start queuing at your Apple shop now, wherever
you can order it online as well. But if you
when does it get delivered? Does it get delivered on the 28th?
I think pretty soon after, if not on the 28th. The issue for me is to have a look at the prices on the website. They're actually not too bad when you compare to the outrageous prices people are getting on eBay.
I know. I was going to bring back a couple of spares and get a couple of... Let's put it this way, I'd pay for mine, but I didn't.
Are they selling well on eBay?
Oh, yes.
What prices have you seen?
I've seen them down around the $800 mark, but there's been some for over $1,000.
Yeah. All right, we are talking about the iPad, for those of you going, what on earth are they talking about? Which is the wonderful new little tablet device, which Apple have said no to Flash on, which has caused all sorts of waves. But yes, the prices were released over the weekend. And there's two models. There's a Wi-Fi model only, and there's a Wi-Fi plus a 3G, which means you can put a SIM card into it. Now, the SIM card is extra to the prices that we're going to be talking about here, but on the whole of it, the actual device is going to be about 11%, which isn't too much, really, when you think about what Adobe does. 11% greater than what the prices are in the United States. Now, if you want the Wi-Fi version only, that means you don't roam. Wherever there's a hotspot, you can just connect to it and do what you want to do. You're looking for the middle-of-the-road one, because there's three models, a 16 gig, a 32 and a 64 gig model. The middle-of-the-road one here is going to be $759. Which is probably good value for money. The equivalent, the 32 gig with the with the 3G, so that's both Wi-Fi and 3G, will set you back just slightly $200 more, which is $928. So $759, no 3G, and $928 with 3G and Wi-Fi.
Now you got the no 3G.
Oh, very loud in my ears.
Am I?
Sorry, I'll turn you down.
You got the no 3G one with Wi-Fi, didn't you?
I did.
And that works well for you.
Well, this is the thing with these devices I'm using here at the moment in the chat. So if you'd like to come along and chat to me, I can't type for quids on these things, as you've probably all seen in the chat in the last few moments. But what we bought it what I bought it for our household, is the always-on internet connection. This device is going to live on the kitchen table, where anyone in the family can just grab it, jump online, check the weather out, check their email, browse to a website, whatever they might happen to do. And it's just that. It's an always-on device. And the battery in this thing's amazing. You know, you can go, I'd say, weeks without a charge based on what you're doing. And, of course, watching films on them is also pretty impressive. So keeps the kids entertained for hours in the backseat of the car if you've got nothing else.
And in preparation for the iPad coming out in Australia, both Telstra and, to a certain degree, Optus have released new pricing plans.
Man, Telstra has dropped the proverbial pants on this one. I've never seen Next G pricing like this. If you can find better, well, I'll put it this way. Telstra are offering $20 a month for 1 gig. Now, this is prepaid only, not postpaid. So you can't get it on you got to do your prepaid each and every month. So $20 a month for a gig, which, if you're not downloading files, if you're just using it for web and email and, you know, downloading the odd app and stuff like that, that's tons, wherever you might happen to be. And Optus have gone one better. They've gone $20 for 2 gigs. So I'd go the first one.
And this is personally for data only, so there's no voice service attached. But if you want to run VoIP, eventually there'll be a VoIP application.
I'm sure there will be. So it's a glorified phone, but it just doesn't have a place to make a telephone call, really, yet.
Well, so if you don't use all of that 1 gigabyte of data, say on the Telstra plan.
Sayonara.
Okay, so you lose whatever you don't use.
You do.
All right, and then you just have to pay another $20 for the next month. So
that's
it's
right.
Like a prepaid.
That's right.
All right, and if you don't pay the $20, then the account just stops working, the service just stops working?
I think you've got 6 months to keep it going. You've got to chip something into it within 6 months, otherwise it disappears. So it's a viable option if you're not really doing much.
Mm.
Just chip $20 in every so often when you want to go out. But hey, check Telstra's website and the providers of your choice's website for more details on that. But it's sounding quite promising. $20 a month.
It's pretty good. But
for
if
a gig,
all...
like,
but,
can I put that in perspective?
Yep.
Normally, Telstra prepaid, $20 would get you about 300 meg.
What's stopping me from getting one of these SIM cards and bunging it in my other portable device?
That's probably an IMEI number.
Also doesn't fit.
Graham's raised a very good
point. Well,
there
you go. There's the answer to your question. It doesn't fit.
They've got a new size SIM card, haven't they?
Yes.
So what happens to the USIM? Only for phones. Only for broadband devices.
Well, yeah, the existing SIMs that they use will only go in the current handsets and PDAs, which we have, but this new one, the micro SIM...
Is this the next generation SIM or is this an iPad-only SIM? I'm asking technical questions here, aren't I?
No one else is using it.
So far it's iPad-only, yeah.
They haven't yet.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So,
but having said all this about plans, if all you want to do is to have an iPad and you want to sit at home and watch the telly and have that on your coffee table so you can
just
quickly check. Just get Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
You don't need to
save
pay $20 a month. You don't need to pay anything. If you've already got a wireless hotspot at home,
yep,
which is built into your internet router, then use that.
And obviously the Australian App Store will come online on the same day because right now there is no App Store for the iPad in Australia. That's why mine's joined to the American one.
Does the iPhone have an App Store?
Does the iPhone?
I don't know. I'm not an iPhone user.
The planet are you orbiting there, Dr.
iTunes,
Ron? Yeah, it's
Dr.
called
Ron.
iTunes. You familiar with it?
Well, okay, so it doesn't have its own dedicated one. It uses iTunes. Is that right? I don't know. I'm not an Apple
store
fanboy.
There's an App Store within iTunes, yes.
All right, okay, there's an App Store in iTunes.
But you'll get email.
So why can't the iPad then just access that and use that? Why do you have to have a brand new store?
It's territory locked. It's the same store, just it won't allow access because you're not in the right country.
Oh. Same as your DVDs locked to region 4 in Australia, that sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, all that. So anyway, Optus confirmed its 3G plans different to Telstra. The plans start for $20 for... Sorry, Telstra's is $20 for 1 gig and Optus has doubled the data in the basic plan. 2 gig, $20. It also includes more data in its $60 plan, providing 8 gig versus Telstra's 6 gig. I'm not sure what you would download unless you're going to have... Well, it's not like a computer where you're downloading like programs to run. You can call that an apps, but the apps are pretty not that heavy. Goodness me, you go through plenty of data for one of those. Anyway, so there you go. In average, 11% more is what the iPad is going to cost you in this country compared to that of the United States. And 11 countries, I think you said in the news.
11, there's a lot.
That's going to. So, yeah, queue up. We might do some Vox Pops down at our local Apple store, see if we can see what we can stir up on the 28th. What day is it? Does anyone know what day it is? Like a Tuesday or something silly? We'll work that out during the break.
Don't know.
You've got an iPad in front of you. That'll tell you.
That'll tell
I
you,
do.
Yeah.
All right. Let's
make your own iPad micro SIM with nail clippers. I just found this article on the
web. Yes, you can.
Yeah, good.
Google it, guys.
So it's the same technology,
don't
just
do
smaller.
It. Yeah.
Just smaller.
Don't expect the SIM card to ever work in your phone again.
It won't.
The only caveat.
The 28th is a Friday for those of you playing at home.
A Friday. Mm. Okay, so plan your day. You can sleep out, take the day off work, make a long weekend, and go and camp out by your local Apple store. There's two in Melbourne. So one down the road from us here, which is not too far away. Now, last week on the show, our show goes to air on a Monday, live, around the countryside.
It is rebroadcast on other stations around Australia on different days during the week.
It is. Last weekend, see, right now, as we go to air, it's the weekend still in the United States, so they're not all up and about just yet. But last time when we went to air, there was all sorts of innuendo and blogs saying that Flash was not going to be supported in Internet Explorer, the latest version, IE9.
Yes.
And a lot of people drew, basically said, well, this is it. This is the end for Flash.
Yes, I think we misunderstood it here as well.
I was very much along that line as well. But since then, we weren't the only ones
We've had a clarification.
Microsoft have clarified. They've done the butter and basically come out and said that IE9 will not support Flash natively. It never will, but it will support it in the form of a plug-in. But they also went on to say that...
Which is how it supports it already.
Which is exactly... It's no different to what
it
is.
And that's what I think Dr. Run was asking last week. Yeah, don't you just download and install it? And yes, you still will.
And you still will.
Which
correct.
In case you do for Safari on the Mac operating system anyway.
Oh, there you go. But you just can't do it on an iPad or an iPhone.
An iPhone or an iPad.
Yeah. So a lot of... brouhaha over not much really, but at the end of the day, we're moving towards HTML5. Most of the major manufacturers are actually going to start using the H.264 video codec, which is a very good codec for watching video.
We're not going to get into a standard life form, are we?
Well, they're hedging their bets really, and saying that Flash it's sort of still on life support. It's come out of intensive care, but it's still in a critical condition, and it's probably its days are numbered, as we would be saying. But Flash would tell you, or should I say, Adobe would tell you otherwise. They're going very much hammer and tong with the new Android operating system and a new Google tablet. So which would be interesting to see what that all comes up. Now that was they were talking about that at the what was it called, Web 2.0 conference in San Francisco last week, where the CTO, the chief technical officer of Adobe, basically really got stuck into Apple in no uncertain terms. Now I'm just about to play you a bit of a slab of what he actually said in front of the masses there, but he was really getting stuck into Adobe, into Apple, saying it was very uncompetitive and anti-internet. And anyway, here's a little bit of what he had to say.
And if you look at what's going on right now, it's kind of like, to go back, like railroads in the 1800s. So, there was a very competitive network of railroads at that time, and everybody was trying to compete on freight delivery and everything. And part of the competitive dynamic was people were using different gauge rails to prevent freight cars from running across the country. You had to actually stop, unload the car, put it in somebody else's, competitive network, and your cars literally would not run. And that wasn't good for industry, wasn't good economically for the U.S., wasn't good for competition. And I think that's what's attempting to be done right now, and I think that's totally counter to the internet, totally counter to the web. We need to have freedom of transport, we need to have open access, we need to enable people to compete on the merits of the things they do, not on the gauge of the rails. And the gauge of the rails today is writing native code for applications on a particular operating system, and in a way that it's really expensive to then go and make it for others. And so people won't. You'll see people make it just for a particular phone, and that cost is preventing healthy competition.
So that's true for native applications, but not necessarily true for web applications. With regard to native applications, do you feel that cross-platform code can retain the unique sensibilities of the individual platform?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the stuff that's been created on the web today, very rich, obviously, content and applications, and computing is a history of creating new levels of abstraction in order to make people more productive. And it doesn't mean that you have a loss of expressiveness or a loss of fidelity. In fact, you can get more expressiveness than you had before because these patterns enable you to do more and do more productively. And so it goes from like assembly language to compilers to frameworks to graphical user interfaces to operating systems. And now we have the layer of the web. And that I would say is not a decrease in capability over time. I think that's been an increase in capability. So I think it's a false assumption to think that if we try to make things run across a variety of devices that somehow they'll be less effective. You can still take advantage of microphones when they're available, cameras when they're available, rotation, touch input, for example. And inside Flash, for example, FlashPack 10.1, we support multi-touch input. And that's going to work across devices. So you can say, hey, I've got my particular touchscreen. Well, Flash makes that work the same across all touchscreens. So if you want to get 32 different inputs on your screen, Flash supports that. If your device enables that, if you only have 8 inputs, it only has 8. And so your application can be incredibly innovative around how to handle multi-touch and do that in a consistent way, but take full advantage of you know that innovation that's happening. And so that's the dynamic. So I don't think you have a loss at all.
Well, Jason Grigsby wanted to know if you were going to route around Apple and continue to compile to iPhone native code for enterprise applications or maybe take advantage of jailbroken phones and release enable applications released on Cydia.
Right. We've, I think, done a great job technically getting Flash applications to run on the iPhone. Already there's a bunch in the store that already went through the approval process. You can, from Flash CS5, which is out in the market right now, you can create an app. So technically we made it work. You know, the technology issue I think Apple actually has with us is not that it doesn't work, it's that it does work. You can actually make a great application that works fine across operating systems, and they don't like that. So now, whether we don't want to, you know, play technology games when Apple's playing a legal game. So, you know, they're just changing their license agreement to block what we did. We had great innovation on technology inside of Creative Suite, and, you know, a few days before we released it, Apple changed their licensing terms. So, you know, that's a different game. So we're not going to keep, you know, doing technological work when we're being blocked like that. So we're focusing on everybody else. I think there's a huge wave of innovation that is happening right now, and there's going to be a wide diversity of devices that are coming out. You know, I've seen a lot of what's coming, and we're working with collaboration through something called the Open Screen Project, which is about open access to content applications. And we've got over 70 partners now working with Adobe on that. And so I've been able to see what's coming, and I'm under NDA with all these guys, but boy, there's a lot of great devices coming out, and I think you'll be blown away when you see them. They're coming out, you know, over the course of the second half of this year and next year and going forward.
And what is the Open Screen Project?
Open Screen Project is about enabling a world where you can actually make whatever you want and you can deploy it across devices. So, and that's something that I think is ultimately going to be the best way to go for the industry. That's something that we're working with basically everybody except one company on right now. We'd love to work with that one too. But and so, you know, all the variety of the innovation that's happening with all these other companies is going to dwarf what's happening from one company. I think we've seen that play out before. You know, I think we're at basically right now like the early days of the personal computer revolution. And it's now happening across multi-screens and smartphones and tablets and television sets and all kinds of different form factors and netbooks. And we're in the early days. And I think we're going to see, we're at the beginning of the game, we're not the end of the game. There's going to be a lot of more to play out here. I think it's like 1984, you know, in a lot of ways.
Literally, like the end. Is the...
That was Kevin Lynch, Adobe's CTO.
I'm confused. Flash is available for free, and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Right.
It's not what you call open
source. So he's actually
selling
a product.
He is selling a product.
Whereas HTML5 and being able to program for HTML5 is, well, actually free.
Correct. He also made mention that there were many Flash-based applications on the Apple iStore too, which...
Well, they were coded in the Flash engine, but they've been exported in HTML5 or some other format, not Flash format.
So they don't need Flash running on the device to operate. Yep.
Yeah.
So it's interesting times, really, isn't it, where one company has decided it doesn't want to go with Flash, and Adobe is obviously doing its best to upsell it, which is what you just heard there, and that was at Web 2.0, which was in San Francisco just recently, and of course, other companies are embracing it, such as Android, the operating system, which runs on the new Google tablet.
So one other company is embracing.
Yeah, well, one other is, and Microsoft's going steady as she goes.
Well, I just had a quick look whilst we were listening there, and some other news is that HP have bought out the Palm operating system, in fact, Palm altogether, and have now got the rights to the web OS that Palm run on their devices. And there's some suggestion that HP are going to use that on their forthcoming slate.
Okay.
And Web OS 10, I think is the latest version, actually has a Flash plugin in it. So, in fact, there's a couple of other platforms around too.
Okay. Well, that's... it may be a bit more longevity yet in the old Flash, despite the fact that Mr. Jobs... But then again, it's a big ask, isn't it? If Apple's going to sell, on average, 1 million iPads a month, it doesn't take long to do the maths before that's going to roll out and reach saturation. So even if you were a, I guess, a company of any sorts and you were selling your wares, you'd be asking developers not to develop in Flash, especially if you were doing mobile apps or apps for the mobile market, if majority of it's going to be
at the moment the dominant player is Apple. It may not be in the future, and that's what Adobe are hoping for by the sounds of that interview we just heard. But, well, you know, the interesting thing is to look at the development of the pad devices, and Apple have sold a million in a fairly short period of time just in the US market. And so, yes, other people can have wonderful stuff, but they weren't first to market. Well, Apple weren't first to market, but they weren't first to explode the market. So it'll be interesting to see what plays out.
Dr. Ron Coro?
Correspondence. Is it that time of the night already?
Yeah, it's halfway through the show.
From Deep Pool.
Who? Deep Pool?
Deep Pool. Deep Pool. He's a new forum member, and he's actually posted that in the thread. Any recommendations for an ISP? Now, that's a good thread there, and we're talking about, I think, GD, who's our mod in the chat room tonight. Come and chat to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Conroy's in there too.
Yeah, everyone's in there. GD was asking about the best plan for an elderly neighbour, I think, or a family member, best ISP plan. D. Pool says you must give him a lot of options. Of course, all that would come as affordable for a senior. You know, sometimes, or let me say most of the times, they want to get the best value for money. And just a tip, extend your patience. Please let me know as well on what plan he decided to go with. I've been interested to get my grandmother an internet connection for communication. We'll appreciate your reply. So that's an interesting forum thread there. And welcome to Deep Pool, and thanks for the post there. We also had an email from GJMCN, and the email was entitled Espionage, Reportage, and Garbage. And GJMCN says, this is in regards to the iPhone HD scandal involving Gizmodo we spoke about last week.
Oh, yes, Lydia was talking about the...
Yes. Apple has in the past pre-released product to key opinion makers, iPad to newspapers and industry bloggers. Is that right,
Yep, JD? They have, yep. The Wall Street Journal had an iPad under lock and key for quite a few weeks before the release.
Did they?
Yeah, typically when a company does that, they make the person who's got it sign a non-disclosure agreement so they don't talk about it before it's before the news is out.
Doesn't stick.
In doing this, they have set a precedent, says GJMCN. By their own actions, the possibility of undesirable exposure, and if the company wants to test these products in the wild, then they must accept that there are risks. Lending a prototype to a staffer for testing creates, for Apple, a voluntary assumption of the risk, and for the unfortunate staffer, possibly if the loss was in fact unintentional, a good case for unfair dismissal. Good press should stick to the facts, look at the phone analytically, discuss its features and the possible direction implied for the industry, and move on. In regards to Flash, say this apropos of just what we're talking about now, given its origin and the level of IE6, now that we are at IE8, despite its vulnerabilities, still trolling around the interweb, rumours of a rapid demise may be greatly exaggerated.
Thanks. I think so.
Thanks for the email, GJMCN. We said that might have been a death knell for Flash last week, but yeah, lots happened in the last few days.
If we can just go back to the first letter that you were talking about there, recommending ISPs.
Recommending internet plans for...
In this day and age, I'll just add my two cents worth in here. In this day and age, it's not so much about the service. It's about the content that you get for free on these plans these days. If the person who you are shopping around for has a... like the ABC, for example, all the programs on iView are available through some internet service providers as non-metered downloads. Now, that can be really good if you are that way inclined. There are other free parts, because this is how ISPs are differentiating themselves in the marketplace these days, not by the speed, but by the extra value-added content that's coming through. So,
And that might be more important to some people than to others. A lot of elderly people on the internet, and there are a lot of elderly people on the internet, what they really want is email and probably a little bit of Skype, because what they're trying to do is to stay in touch with a far-flung family. For a lot of elderly people, that's really all they want. So content and download might not be hugely important. What might be the most important factor, particularly for elderly internet users, would be technical support.
Yeah, so, there's another valid consideration.
And that is a huge consideration. If they ring up the you know, if they get on the internet, doesn't work, have they got somebody they can ring who'll talk them through it nice and patiently and help them get it up and running again?
So as a customer of a rather large ISP,
yeah,
what would be a good ISP for technical support?
Good question.
I'm not familiar with any.
No. Well, ISP I use provides excellent value for money in terms of gigabytes, but no, I certainly wouldn't say their tech support was outstanding in any way.
One of the things you probably should do is hit Whirlpool, the forums, because there's a lot of people chatting about just what we're talking about now.
And that's absolutely true, and there'll be lots of discussions there about the quality of various tech support. One of the issues with Whirlpool, though, is it's now so big that almost anything that you search for, you'll find somebody who's had a problem with it.
Mm.
So, yeah, sometimes you have to be a little bit careful how you interpret.
You do, because people are far more likely to complain than they are to praise.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
The other thing, too, is if you have a look at the top ISPs in Whirlpool, on the right-hand side, I think it is, when you log on, that's a good indication of what people are thinking about on-the-ground sort of service and reliability.
Voting with their feet.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have a bit of a read up there, that'll give you some good indication. So it is, they like signing up for 2 years, so it's a decision you've got to have a look at, because they'll ping you for 2 years worth of service, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And one bit of advice I would say is shop around and don't go with the bigger guys, because sometimes when you're too big, you miss out on the service and you miss out on that extra bit of, I guess TLC that you would normally get from...
The two or three very biggest names that you can think of in telecommunications are probably not the ones you're going to go for as an ISP.
That's right. You'll end up paying a lot and you'll be
and
frustrated.
And not getting all that much, yeah.
So,
when Andrew's talking about Whirlpool, he's not talking about domestic white goods manufacturers.
Yeah, Whirlpool.net.au, not Whirlpool.com.au.
Oh, you're talking about buying washing machines.
I was going to get Simpson too.
That's it. Yes, as Graeme said, Whirlpool.net.au. There's a link there on the left-hand side that says Broadband Choice, and that will be able to help you out.
Now, both Whirlpool and our own forums, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, these are things where you can have a topic that runs, but it's not in real time like our chat is. You can post a question, you come back a couple of days later, and you'll find that several people have made a comment to your post. It's like
public email.
You know, public email. So yeah, exactly. So you don't have to be listening to us at 8 o'clock on a Monday night to participate in our forum, and the same thing applies to. Whirlpool, you can post something there, come back a couple of days later and see what discussion has ensued since. So, that's the way to use that technology. Whereas the chat, our chat.techtalkradio.com.au is if it's at 8 o'clock Monday night, Eastern Australian time, where you're listening to the show, then that's real time.
And you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Wrong, JD, and Graeme are in this evening. And tonight's show still to come. We're going to be... Well, great website of the week with Dr. Ron, as we've alluded to earlier on the show. It's an absolute doozy, this one. Just a quick question, guys. We're all in the IT field. There's no girls in here, is there? Why is this so? Why do girls not really get on board with the techie stuff? And this is a question that we're going to put to Sandrina Branton later on this evening, and she's going to be talking to us
from.
She's from BMC Software, and they've just done a bit of a study and looked into why the girls the tech's really a boys' domain. A boys' club.
I've been in IT for a lot of years now, and I've encountered probably a handful of women in the industry. And there's no... certainly the ones I've known have been excellent in their fields, and there's been no issues there. So it'll be interesting to find out why there's not more.
We'll have a bit of a chat about that after the break.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Yes, thank you very much to D-Link for sponsoring Tech Talk Radio.
Absolutely.
We'll continue their sponsorship as we go through the rest of 2010. We're halfway through it now, nearly, aren't we? It's very scary,
Almost.
Isn't it? It's like a show.
What's his show, number 19 or something?
For this year,
out of control.
Absolutely. Did you know that ICANN, which is the organisation for domain names and all things internet from a, that sort of point of view, Arabic has become the first non-Latin language to hit the internet. Arabic, isn't it good?
Now, this is not... I mean, we've had Arabic web pages for quite a while, but
not in domain names. But this is in
the
actual
domain name where you type in at the top of the page. Now, you can actually type it in Arabic.
How do you do that?
Obviously, well, with an Arabic keyboard.
Or the copy and paste function.
I was about to say, because if you look at, if you've ever gone into Windows and things like that and opened up a little program called Charmap, charmap.exe, I don't know what it is on the Mac, but that's what it is on the PC. Mm. It shows you all the different characters in that particular font that you're using. And you do see the Arabic characters there in some font. So obviously there's a keyboard that goes, it just shows my ignorance in this sort of department, but...
Yeah, there's keyboards and the whole
so when you boot
modified user interface that goes with Windows in Arabic, yeah, and you click and you type and the characters appear from the other end.
Really, the other end? Is that how that works?
So they go, right to left sometimes in some languages. So
anyway, the Internet Corporation for Sign Names, otherwise known as ICANN, has heralded the new dawn of the internet, making internationalized domain names available for the first time in its history. So how long is that? 25 years, is that right? No, 30 years nearly we've had this thing going around. Anyway, the first IDN, country code, top-level domain, was inserted into the DNS root zones last week for Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. The three top-level domains were the first to appear, courtesy of ICANN's fast-track process, which approved the meeting in Seoul last October. What I want to know, remember also in that meeting they were going to say they're going to drop the .com so you could just be Apple or Microsoft. Mm.
They were going to change the way that top-level domains work.
Yeah, and they did a bit of a tweak in the DNS in the zone file the other day, or their root servers, which might have given everyone grief because I was still trying to work out what day it was, and I didn't notice anything untowards. The internet's still working as far as I'm concerned. Anyone notice anything strange on that day?
No.
Good.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking. So
well done, ICANN. You've got that one right. So, anyway. So there you go. Arabic, the first international language. What's to follow, one might ask? When are we going to do Italian and French and English?
Greek is going to be a big one.
No, they've skipped on that because of the economy over there. They don't need the internet, apparently.
The Greek are going to need the internet to rebuild their economy, I can guarantee you that.
I heard they were going to sell a few islands. I thought that'd rebuild their economy.
That's an interesting approach.
They didn't like that idea.
No. I would imagine there'd be a... I'm trying to think of the word. The language used in Russia and that area. The
Russian?
No, there's a name for that whole group of languages.
Baltic
type. Yeah, there's an alphabet that's used for all those languages that would end up being very big, I would imagine, as well. Not to mention Japanese and Chinese and Korean and Arabic, as you mentioned, and those related languages.
Japanese, I would have thought that'd be fairly, and Chinese in particular.
Kanji, yep,
a bit of Mandarin.
Mm.
Nihao ma. That'd be fairly big Nihal. In the... well, how's yes, any? That'd be fairly big. Sorry. Speaking of Kevin Rudd...
Yes. he can speak Mandarin.
He can
Mandarin.
Speak Mandarin.
Yeah.
He's a bit on the nose at the moment. I'm not sure what's going to happen here. If you're listening outside of Australia, we've mentioned before we've got a federal election coming up in the not-too-distant. And it's really funny, isn't it? Because the Mr. Rudd, the incumbent leader...
Prime Minister.
Could have... Prime Minister, yes, there's another word for it.
Yes.
He could have gone to an election early. He had many triggers to go to an election. And the longer he's left it, the harder it's becoming.
Yep.
So our opposition, not that I think, well, let's not talk about politics in this. Let's just say that you don't win elections, you lose them.
Mm.
And it's interesting. And now we've got a few other issues that are coming up, like the net filter and obviously the NBN.
We're gathering that the net filter legislation we're not going to see until after the election now.
So we might not see it.
Well, we won't see it in time to do anything about it, which is a message we're going to have to send loud and clear to the Labor Party when election time comes around.
Yes.
And yes, also they're laughing at me there, Dr. Ron.
The problem is they've got some really, really good ideas, and they've got some really, really dumb, stupid ideas as well.
Well, yeah, the net filter being on the dumb, stupid idea side.
And the NBN being
exactly the opposite. Yeah, the NBN is exactly what this country needs.
And the problem is that we're talking about before the show, like saying that we think that, you know, when was the last time a government in Australia only was in office for a single term, but... Looking at the way Kevin Rudd's going at the moment, you've got to wonder. But what are the alternatives? You look at Mr. Abbott's
Well, he hasn't got an alternative. If he gets quizzed about what his broadband solution will be for the country, he says, "Well, don't you worry about that.
In a mothball it.
Yeah, we'll come out."
There is no credible opposition.
No, what we are going to do is to scrap the NBN. That's all we can tell you. We don't have anything which is.
Did they say that in those words?
Yes, we are going to scrap it. It is reckless, and it will be scrapped. They've made no secret about that at all. Yeah. So it's really...
What are they going
to
do with the net filter? I haven't heard anything about that.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
Yeah.
So knowing our luck, the Libs will get in and they'll scrap the NBN and they'll introduce the net filter. Then won't we get hot under the collar?
Then we'll just all move.
Oh, I think we'll have to.
We'll leave it. End up with no government at all like they have in the UK.
Yes, well,
What's happened over there? What's the state of play in the UK?
In the UK, they've had an election, and
it's a hung parliament, virtually, isn't it?
Yep, they've got no party with a clear majority, and the only sort of likely coalition is between two polar opposites, with the Liberal Democrats and the Tories, the Conservative Party over there.
How's that going to work?
Well, it's not, clearly. So, goodness knows what they're going to be going to another election within 12 months over there, I would say. And it's going to be an absolute disaster. And they failed completely to organise polling. And they had people turned away from polling booths at 10 p.m. when the polls closed.
And not enough polling slips, no. Apparently.
Sounds like a third world country, doesn't it?
It really was. And, I mean, voting over there isn't compulsory, but obviously it should be.
Got a lot to be said for compulsory voting because
there's
then you know your turnout. You know where you have to go and you're going to be on the list to vote. And it's important in this day and age.
Well, we don't have compulsory voting here. We have compulsory attendance at a voting station.
That's a very fine line, Dr. Robert.
It is, but it's an important one.
He's got his conspiracy theory cap on again.
We have compulsory voting and we have a secret ballot, which
is
not quite compatible.
There's no check to make sure you've actually put any pencil on the paper.
Yeah. But you draw the smiley face on the side and, yes.
There was an interesting...
Hearts and flowers, anything but actually...
Whilst we're talking about the election, the politics in the UK, which is completely irrelevant to Tech Talk Radio,
but it's interesting.
This might bring some perspective into why we're talking about it. The Pirate Party's first general election has ended in disappointment after the group received just 1,340 votes in total for its 9 candidates. Manchester Gordon candidate Tim Dobson performed best, winning 236 votes, while Jack Nunn in the cities of Westminster and London fared worst, achieving just 90 votes.
In a hung parliament, that's something. That's some achievement.
It is. Additionally, no member managed 5% share of the vote, meaning that they all forfeited their £500 deposit.
There you go. I think they'd all consider it money well spent.
So the Pirate Party in the UK,
I mean, the Pirate Party has actually got some degree of a point to it, which is interesting. It's probably worth looking up their webpage. They do a bit of a search for Pirate Party. It is worth having a look at what they stand for. Have a look at some stage. Right. But in the UK, they do have a fantastic tradition of insane independent candidates for some of their constituencies. It's a marvellous tradition that we've missed out on over here.
Oh, no, we've got a few good independents. Nick Xenophon is my hero at the
moment. Yes, but we've never had a stark raving loony party.
Haven't we?
Well, not by name, anyway.
I wouldn't jump to conclusions there. Yeah. dear, welcome to Tech Talk Politics.
Sorry about that.
We're going to register the Tech Talk Radio Party.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no.
Off you go. Don't you need 500 people to be part of your party to do that? But
We could rustle up 500 listeners to join our
join
party.
Join the chat now if we can.
Party of the first party. Yeah, we'll get everyone signed up.
Now, before
what's the policy? Free broadband for everyone?
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah.
Don't worry about healthcare or education or anything. Let's stick with us. We'll get your internet
working. We'll deliver all the healthcare and education over the broadband network, over the fibre to the
telemedicine
network.
Telemedicine.
Teleeducation. Yep.
You'll never have to leave home again,
education.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Australia's got a fine tradition of distance education, so why not?
We'll take a look at the 1% Medicare levy. We could add another 1% and have it the broadband levy.
The broadband levy. There you go. Vote one, Andrew McColl.
Fibre
optics. Interesting
thing is, that's not a bad policy.
How long does it take us to register a political party? We should do that.
Dear. Anyway, someone in the chat just said he'd love to have Howard back. Oh, dear. And his name's Freak. Well, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? What we were talking about before we got stuck into politics was the net filter circumvention. Apparently, it's going to be completely legal. So if you wanted to circumvent Mr. Conroy's filtering system,
yes.
Go right ahead.
No problem.
Go right ahead.
I tried this out the other day. I did a bit of a quick search of some terms that your average punter might look up and, you know, if they've been clued up, you know, VPN and that sort of stuff. And I found a free service that used the built-in Windows VPN client, so you didn't have to install any software on your machine. You just had to create a VPN connection, key in a username and password, which you signed up for free on a web page, had it up and running inside 3 minutes.
Wow. And where did you... Which country did you appear to be in once you'd done the VPN?
Somewhere strange in the north of Europe.
It always like reminds
Helsinki or somewhere I came out.
So. It always reminds me of Bugs Bunny when he sticks his head up and he said, "Oh, I took the wrong turn at Albuquerque."
And where I should have taken that left turn in Albuquerque.
That's the one you go to.
Popped up in Helsinki, but it's great. That's outside Australia.
What was it like in Helsinki when you popped up there?
It's cold.
Oh, I can imagine.
But it was free. There were no Australian internet restrictions.
Could you see the BBC on the Helsinki VPN? Because the people, I'd love to
see
Hulu
couldn't.
Or any of these.
Yeah, well, Hulu.
No, I couldn't. No, I could see lots of European sites that, yes. But there are specific ones that do go to the UK and the US so that you can look at BBC's iView service and Hulu and all those things in America as well.
Oh, very good.
I always like going to Google as a test just to see what the default Google
which
page
Google you
which,
Google,
which Google you hit.
Now, I was with an ISP a long time ago here in Australia, in Melbourne.
Right.
And,
oh, yes, your IP range put you somewhere funny,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, and when I went to google.com, it redirected me to google.in.
India.
Yeah, thought that was an Indian IP address.
Yeah,
the Google
so obviously
service
this new ISP that I'd signed up with had bought a IP range that had previously been in use in India. And, yeah, I got Google in Indian, in what language do they speak in India? I can't...
Indian.
In Hindi or something.
Hindi?
Yeah, which was...
the show after us is Indian. We should find
helpful.
Out and see what they speak. Okay, other interesting news. Penalties for those that compete with the NBN. If you can't beat them, kill them.
Oh, okay.
How about this? If someone comes up and competes with the NBN, apparently, you'll be penalised. And I think this is really something for Telstra. I don't think this applies to anyone else. But I guess any network operator that attempts to compete with the NBN company by undercutting its wholesale price could be forced to open up its network to competitors or be hit with a financial levy under recommendations made by in that survey.
So all they're saying is that anything of an equivalent scope has to be open to...
Correct.
To have...
No names, no pack drills. They just failed short of using Telstra in there. According to the NBN implementation study created by McKinsey & Co. and KPMG, there are real fears that making the NBN Co. sell wholesale services at a uniform price could lead to being undercut in well-populated areas. So, but the pricing that they were talking about wasn't too bad. Mr. Conroy, I saw him on the telly. He was standing up there saying... The cheapest is going to be about $20 or something, wasn't it? And the dearest was about $60. So,
well, that doesn't sound.
It didn't sound too bad at the time. I'm just off the top of my head, though. I could be completely wrong. Sometimes I am.
I'm just wondering, though. This isn't going to sponsor competition in any way, shape, or form. I understand the sentiment, which is if you've got a big broadband network available in the capital cities, and you live in Upper Kambukta West, and you don't have access to more than one service, then you shouldn't be disadvantaged. I get that bit. But why drive competition out of the marketplace altogether? That seems a bit strange.
It is, but I guess that's what NBN's doing. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too, really, aren't they? Making sure they've got all their caps in place.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace. I think they're just trying to avoid competition in those particular areas where it's unhelpful. Like we've seen in the pay TV field, where we had competition for the cable running down the street and which cable your content was going to be delivered over, and that was just insane. Obviously, you have, you know, the cable running down the street is obviously a natural monopoly. The content you provide over it, that's where you provide competition. Otherwise, you just end up with duplication of services and in an investment in exactly the wrong areas.
The McKinsey KPMG report found that the NBN will be viable. We haven't mentioned that yet tonight, have we? I think
you mentioned it in the
had
news.
It up the top of the news, yeah, which was good news for the
and it's
government.
It's viable whether Telstra is in or out.
Yes. They said if Telstra cooperates, well, let me go back a step. The government first said that the projection was going to be $43 billion, which is a lot of money in anyone's book. McKinsey KPMG found that if Telstra cooperates, it's only going to cost $26 billion.
That's substantially less.
Substantially
for the taxpayer.
Less, almost a half. And if Telstra doesn't cooperate, $38 billion.
So $5 billion, they've overestimated by $5 billion what they thought it would.
I've never known a government to overestimate. I thought they always underestimated.
If it's going to be so cheap, why is it taking so long to do anything about it, though?
Oh, because there's a government involved. And I'm not saying whether it be any particular flavour of government, just that there is bureaucracy in a government involved.
Well, Mr Conroy said that his preferred option was to have Telstra included, but obviously he's not going to hang around forever. And if he doesn't get some sort of response from them in the next few weeks or next month or so, they'll just start going it alone. They'll cut Telstra out altogether.
Which goes, and to be honest, I don't think that would be a bad thing technologically for the network.
A lot of people are saying that.
Yeah, if they use Telstra, you're going to end up compromising the technology. We're going to end up using existing copper lines in
some
places.
Which is old technology.
Which is old technology. Whereas if we go without Telstra, we're going to lay new fibre, going to run coaxial fibre instead of running copper, you know, telephone wires.
Yep.
And yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
But surely you could cherry-pick the parts of the Telstra network that met the specification for the NBN.
I'm sure you could, and I'm sure that's what they're talking about, but I suspect the temptation would be there to go just a little bit too far with keeping the old. Mm. Yeah.
What about the dark fibre that's in the streets underneath our cities? There's got to be a lot of dark fibre being fibre optics, which has been run because it was cost-effective to run at the time when they ran other cables. It's just not been commissioned yet. It's not turned on. There's no light in it.
Well, I'm sure there'd be that this would be one of the things that an NBN co would be looking at acquiring some of that as part of their network. I'm sure they'd look at all those sorts of options as to how to get data from A to B.
But isn't that the reason why, sort of, too, when you're talking about cherry-picking, why Telstra's they've sort of brought out this thing saying, well, you're going to be financially penalised if you compete with us or undercut them, which is potentially what you're going to do in a marketplace. So how can you have two companies out to win or out to earn money undercutting each other when one says you can't? It's got control of the rules. It's a bit one-sided, isn't it?
Well, it's about where you want. It's about regulating the market to ensure that the competition happens in the sensible areas of the operation. Like, as I say, you don't want to compete by having two lots of identical fibre running side by side down the street and switching the content from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
For the physical infrastructure, you probably want to have less competition. For the content being provided over it, you want to open it up as wide as possible, have maximum competition there.
Makes sense. Adam Turner is going to join us after the break. He's going to be talking about new telephone handsets, something to compete with the iPhone, which when Adam turned to the dark side, I thought, that's it, never again. But no, he's actually considering another device. You can find out just what that is after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, I had a very bad experience with this phone.
From a control freak of a company that made the device.
Does that surprise anybody in this room?
Oh, okay. This is a different world.
Oh, yeah. There's got to be one in every country. Is he trying to censor the internet too?
Maybe this should be in /rant.
You'd have to have a screen that reflected the image, preserving the polarisation.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. There's
what do you mean? I've got lots of buttons over here I can click.
Careful, or a quick one to shut us up.
You might.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
You are indeed. And thank you to Mrs. JD for the chocolate cookies tonight. They're going down a treat here in the studio.
Thanks, Mrs. JD.
I'll pass on your thanks.
Probably watching, if you have a look, if you haven't seen, where are you streaming tonight, aren't we? There seems to be cameras everywhere again in the studio.
Ustream.tv / Tech Talk Radio AU.
And we're probably on 10-second delay or 30-second delay or whatever Ustream does up there. So anyway, you can also chat to us live while we go to air at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And there's a full board of callers there this evening. I notice Adam Turner's even in there as well. He must be using an iPad because he couldn't get it all out as well. Had all sorts of problems logging in this evening.
Adam Tur,
yeah. So we know who he is. And in fact, while we're talking about Adam Turner, he does a few from a couch for us each and every week, which you're about to hear right now. He also writes many articles for many publications, and you've probably seen them around the traps. They're very good. Have a read. And this week's one was... this week's view from the couch is no exception. It's very interesting. If you're an Apple iPhone user, maybe there is a device which you may consider changing to. And he's going to tell us what it is.
When choosing between an iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, Windows Mobile and other smartphones, do you think about the App Store? I've been reviewing the new Android-powered HTC Desire, and I love it. Even as an iPhone fanboy, I must confess the Desire blows the iPhone out of the water in terms of specs, features and usability. Apple faces more smartphone competition than ever, and there's certainly a lot riding on the upcoming iPhone 4G and the iPhone OS 4 software update. In terms of features, the HTC Desire is a generation ahead of Apple's iPhone 3GS, although that could be said about many smartphones. The iPhone's strength is user-friendliness. There was a time when this usability placed the iPhone head and shoulders above the competition, but HTC's SenseUI interface, running on Android and Windows Mobile devices, has closed that gap. The Desire's 1-2 punch of a beautiful interface combined with a strong feature set offers the biggest threat to the iPhone we've seen yet. The HTC Desire is so good that for the first time I'm seriously considering whether I should ditch my iPhone, leaving behind Apple in favour of Google's Android mobile operating system. Phone against phone, the Desire is a clear winner, but I think I'll still stick with the iPhone for now, at least until we see the next iPhone. The deciding factor for me is the iPhone App Store, offering easy access to a wealth of new applications. The great thing about a phone with a strong App Store is that the device continues to evolve to meet your needs. Without access to an App Store, any phone you buy is really obsolete the day you buy it. You can't improve it, you can't add new applications to it, it won't meet your ongoing needs. Of course, from a phone maker's point of view, the App Store is also a great way to lock customers into your platform. That's something I've always tried to avoid with my desktop computers. I try to work in such a way that I can easily switch between Windows and Mac and even Linux if I have to without too much trouble. But I can't easily jump from one smartphone platform to another because the applications that you need to make them really work so well are often operating system specific. That's starting to change now with what we're seeing, particularly with Google services and apps that are coming out across different platforms, particularly Android. I've probably spent less than $100 on iPhone apps, but I know most iPhone owners would have spent much more. Now, of course, that doesn't include any music that I've spent on the iTunes Store because I don't buy music or movies on the iTunes Store. But if you had done that and it had digital rights management that wouldn't play on other devices, there's even another thing that's locking you in to the iPhone and the Apple ecosystem. As we've said before, I prefer to buy my music on CD, so I'm not locked into any one player or platform. So, Apple's App Store has been a roaring success, and Google's trying to replicate this with its Android Marketplace. Now, Android Marketplace has certainly matured in the 9 months since I reviewed the HTC Hero, to the point where I suspect that the applications on the Android Marketplace would meet many people's needs. Even so, I know that for now, developers are paying more attention to iPhone OS, especially with the recent release of the iPad and the next iPhone only months away, offering new features such as multitasking. Of course, if Apple continues to treat its developers badly and block applications because they clash with Apple's business model, then developers are going to start asking themselves if it's worth the risk of developing for the Apple platform and will seriously pay more attention to platforms such as Android. If, or perhaps when, the Android Marketplace rivals the iPhone App Store, Android could be the perfect storm that blows the iPhone away. For now, the iPhone App Store is about the only thing holding me to a phone which is otherwise inferior to the HTC Desire in every way. You really need to think about an App Store when you're choosing a smartphone.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, that was Adam Turner talking about the Android options. You going to get one of those, JD?
Probably not. Although,
no?
Although he's going to load it up on his iPhone.
You can port it onto the iPhone. There's a couple of links to that on the internet.
But I think Adam's absolutely right. One of the reasons I didn't go to the iPhone as quickly as I could have, even though I wanted to, was that I had a HTC Windows mobile device and I'd had all these applications and things installed on it. It did what I wanted to do at the time. And so changing to another platform, as Adam suggested, meant uprooting and buying all the stuff again. And
it's amazing, isn't it? That's why I think they keep you, you know, these stores. Nokia has one. It's called Ovi, I think it is. Mm. Obviously, Android has the market, which, Dr. Ron, you use with your Android devices, and the App Store is pretty good. And if you're lucky enough to have a jailbreaked iPhone, you use Cydia and those sort of things, which is there's plenty out there. And once you become loyal to one, you tend to stick. It takes a lot to get you to change device, doesn't it?
And I had a fantastic application for the Newton, the old Apple device.
Called
Pocket Money, which was fantastic at tracking your personal expenses. Now, we're going back to the 1995 days when this first came out, and I kept my Newton running and running and running so I could use that application because I got used to it, I liked it, exported to spreadsheets that I used. It was fantastic.
Hmm.
It's now actually on the iPhone, which is really good, but it's taken a while to get there. But that put me off buying some other Palm or other device in the meantime.
Hmm. I had a Palm 3C. Around about that time, I reckon. That was the one of the first PDAs that I owned. But you had the Newton option. You had the apple-flavoured version.
Yeah, the Newton was enormous. That was the downside.
The big, boofy Newton. That's right.
And once you get an iPad, then you'll be really signed, sealed and delivered to the Apple. You'll sell your soul to the devil, won't you?
Oh, I think I'm there already. Oh,
you are? Okay, good, good. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the opposite sex, shall we? Sitting in the studio at the moment is four members. I don't know who the one I'm missing out was. Four members of the...
Where are you going with this?
No, I'm digging myself into a hole. I'll move on. There's four blokes in the studio. Let's say that. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because in the tech world, the girls are a bit few and far between.
Yeah, it's not that we don't want women on the panel in Tech Talk Radio.
I'd love to have a balance.
It would be nice from a radio point of view just to have a different voice.
It would.
If nothing else. But... yeah, it's interesting. They're a bit few and far between to find in the IT field.
Now, you're really in the tech side of stuff, Graeme. I think you said earlier you could count on one hand how many you've seen in how many years.
Thinking back over the last 20 years or so in the business, and probably count them on one hand. The number of women I've known in the field. Probably five or maybe six.
Interesting. Now in Australia. The number of women on management boards and in leadership roles within IT organisations has declined since 2006.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, counting the number that have been in charge of an IT department in a major organisation or anything like that is, that's very easy to count.
Yeah.
Not hard to count to zero.
So, now, these are the findings from the EOWA 2009 Australian Census of Women in Leadership.
Mm.
So, it's a declining trend. And on the line, joining us now from BMC Software, is Sandrina Branton. Now, good evening, Sandra. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Now, can you shed some light on the reasons why the girls are a bit light on the ground when it comes to IT?
Look, I think fundamentally it's there's not enough girls starting in the technical ranks of IT, and partly I think because IT is seen as being such a blokey, geeky kind of industry. I mean, even TV shows like, you know, The IT Crowd and Big Bang Theory, I mean, it's all about blokes being really geeky and nerdy, and that just doesn't do anything to attract women, does it?
Well, no, not really. And I'd have to say that if you have a bit of a look around, the young girls of today, I have two young daughters, they're very IT savvy, more so compared to their mum. So I don't think it's a case of not being able to do it, is it?
No, I think girls are quite capable of doing the job. It's just I think the industry itself just doesn't seem to be appealing, which is a bit of a shame because there's so many diverse roles in IT. It's not all about being technical and about being hands-on.
So would you say that it's a peer group pressure thing that girls tend to move into other areas, or would it be a problem with maybe the education system and not offering enough choices in that sort of work?
I think it's a bit of both. I look back to when I studied, I actually did a business degree but with a major in IT, and that was 23-odd years ago. And when I started, there was 30 guys and 3 girls. And the two other girls dropped out after 6 months because it was a very male-dominated even back then. Nowadays, I don't think it's changed a lot in those 20 years. I just don't think we're getting the girls into the university degrees, whether they be through the science angle, the engineering angle, or even the business IT angle. We're just not getting the girls in there.
Is there a way that we can change this, educational roles or even marketing roles, I guess?
Look, I think there are. There's a lot of mentor groups out there trying to get more women into the IT area. But I think it's if anything, it's marketing. We need to be explaining to the girls out there that IT doesn't necessarily have to be geeky and nerdy, that it actually can be fun, that there are roles such as sales and pre-sales and even, you know, the marketing of IT, which is very exciting. It doesn't have to be all that technical.
I was just at the NAB conference in Las Vegas recently, which was a broadcasting convention, very technical. And there were a fair few girls there, but they weren't in the tech buying or the tech arena. They were more in the sales side of things. So obviously this is a niche, well, not so much a niche market, but a market where the girls can probably find a role. Would you agree with that?
Look, I would definitely agree. I mean, at BMC, we've got, I think there's three or four women. We've got two sales managers that are both women. We do have sales reps that are also women, but the majority are still men. And if I look at the hiring that I've done in the last year, the number of female CVs coming across my desk, I can literally count. There was probably two or three out of 50 CVs. So there's still a real shortage, even in the sales aspect of IT.
Now, we were talking earlier, you were saying you started your role in the tech industry by building computers and obviously hands-on with a screwdriver. I can't think of any woman that I've ever come across, any girls, anyone that's actually felt comfortable with a screwdriver in their hand pulling a computer apart.
Look, I fell into it, to be honest with you. I studied, like I said, a Bachelor of Business with a major in IT in Perth. And at the time, this was back in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, and there was actually quite a number of jobs around at the time, and my degree was primarily in the programming space, and I got offered a job in PCs, which sounded really, you know, exciting at the time because everyone else was doing maintenance programming, and I got the opportunity to fly around Western Australia fixing computers and doing all sorts of extravagant things. So it was really I thought it was way more glamorous than being a maintenance programmer, being in PCs, and I've sort of stayed in that side of the business ever since. But one of the main reasons I chose IT was because it's truly universal. It's one of the few industries or one of the few degrees that you can actually take these days, and you can take it anywhere around the world. You don't have to restudy your accounting or learn the new laws of the new countries that you're going to. You can literally take it anywhere.
I guess that's a valid point, and I guess, as you say, if you choose to do a relocate to Silicon Valley like Lydia has done on our show, she's probably our long-time female contributor to the show. She's uprooted from Melbourne and went to live in Silicon Valley, and she's having a ball over there. But, Sandrina, can I ask, are the male employers traditionally sexist? Is there a stereotype there where, I think I only want blokes to work for me? Are we trying to overcome that barrier as well?
I think there is an element of that. And there's also, to be honest, there's the customer perception that if a female turns up to fix your computer problem, you sort of look at her twice and think, well, what can you possibly know? You're a female. And I must admit, I hit that probably 20 years ago, being young and female and you know, the older 40-year-plus veterans of the IT industry looking at you going, gee, you know, what can you possibly know?
So this, to me, is sounding a bit like a social issue as opposed to an education or a technical issue.
I think it's definitely a combination of both. I think, you know, we need to educate the market as well as, I think, by getting more girls actually through the education system, by actually getting them out there, we'll gradually convince the people that, you know, girls can actually know something about computers.
The other thing I've noticed too is there's a lot more girls in the creative side of things. I know that a lot of graphical designers I know are girls, and they're very good at what they do. And also when it comes to, I guess, creating looks and feels that appeal to the female side of life, then that's where their forte is in a lot of respects. But that seems to be where they stop. They don't actually, they'll provide graphics and images for guys to cut up and put on websites. But I know very few people in that next phase of building a website or something like that where, you know, where there are girls in that side of the industry. So it's just, and they're very good and very creative, but that seems to be where they stop.
Yes, and look, you know, I don't have the answer to that one. I don't know. Is it nature or nurture? Is it the genetic, or is it what we've created in society?
Graham Callaghan speaking. There's a perception in some parts of the industry that that there is something fundamentally different between women and men. That women don't get interested in that technical nitty gritty in the very fine detail of how stuff works. that maybe blokes tend to go in for. Do you think there's anything in that?
Oh, look, I think there is something to do with our genetic makeup that the men do seem to be better at that sort of, and not being too derogatory, gentlemen, and the very linear sort of analytical kind of thinking that's required, I think, in parts of the IT industry, whereas women do tend to be more creative, multitasking capable, and therefore more open, I suppose, in their thinking. But I think that we're getting into the realm of generalisations. I don't think that necessarily applies to all women, and I think the industry itself is so broad these days that you don't have to be, you know, male-thinking female to actually be successful.
I must admit, I would welcome some, you know, female input onto our panel here. I think the nearest we've got to it in a long time was Sally Coburn, who's Dr. Feelgood. She's a very technically adept lady who knows how to pull servers apart and put raid arrays in.
She does go against the stereotype I was talking about. She really does have an interest in the nuts and bolts underneath.
Absolutely, but she's a doctor, and once again, I don't want to offend anybody by saying things like that, but even being a doctor to me would be more of a process, an analytical sort of process type sort of thing, and that's where I guess blokes maybe, and I'm purely speculating in my thoughts, that we're a logical bunch of guys. If it's not black, it's white. If it's not white, it's black. But maybe I guess it's a bit like maps and navigating. Now, I can start an argument there, but...
You definitely can on that one, I'm afraid.
Absolutely.
But ask my husband. I can actually navigate a map very well.
But, yeah, see, and that's what I'm saying. Some people either can or can't. And I don't know. I'm just trying to work out why we have this gap. And maybe it is just that girls want to do other things, maybe.
And look, I honestly do think there is a genetic component to it, but I think there's definitely something in society that we can do to try and encourage more girls into the industry. And I think as we see more women in prominent roles in IT as well, I think that'll be more encouraging to the girls out there as well.
Yeah, I think that's a point. Andrew was saying before about the management, whether there might be a bias in upper management when hiring IT staff, but I'm wondering if there's something that us as general sort of IT people, you know, on the shop floor, so to speak, do we make it hard for women to get into the boys' club? Are there things that we're doing wrong? Yeah.
Look, I think IT isn't necessarily unique in that. I think there's a lot of industries out there which are challenging to get more women into the senior roles. And to be honest with you, it's not just IT. It's about women making the choice to juggle career and family, you know, coming home, still cooking the meal, looking after the children, you know, doing the washing, whatever it takes to actually provide a household, as well as run that career. It's very, very difficult.
Well, that may be part of it because, you know, you tend to be a bit on call when you're doing IT. I know you would be, Graham.
Yeah, that's certainly a big issue. The other thing is that, yeah, in a career path, it might be difficult if a woman was to take several years off in the middle of her career to, you know, to raise a very young family and then try and come back into IT.
You'd find yourself out
of date quite quickly in the IT field.
Yeah, I think in IT women just feel that they can't take a couple of years out because you do lose touch so quickly with the technology. But also IT is actually quite a travel intensive industry for some reason, and travel is hard on the family.
Oh, absolutely. I just did it myself. Even as the bloke, it's quite hard on the family. So you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking to Sandrina Branton, who's the sales manager for BMC Software, about girls and IT and potentially the lack of them in the IT industry. Sandrina, crystal ball time. Do you think we're going to get more girls in the IT industry? Are we going to see an influx, or is this going to be a long and slow process?
No, I think it's going to be a long and slow process. And when you've got organisations like BMC Software, I mean, we're great. We've hired a large number of women, and we promote those women based on merit. It's not about gender, going out there and hiring women. I think as more and more organisations look for balance in their organisation, and not specifically to hire and promote women, but look for that gender balance, look for the value that women can actually bring into their organisations, I think you'll see a slow change. But I don't think it's something you're going to see overnight, where all of a sudden next year you're going to get an intake of 50% of women into the IT streams.
With young people at the moment, girls equally as much, if not more, than young boys, they live their lives on MSN and Facebook and MySpace and all those sorts of arenas where they're they're using the technology. The technology isn't foreign to them in any way at all. Do you think that's going to come through in a generation shift where when those people are parents, then they're going to be less hesitant to guide a young girl towards an IT career?
Well, definitely, because they're growing up a lot more IT literate, and so therefore they're less scared of it. I think my mother was very brave letting me, you know, follow an IT career, because it really, at that time, it was only for boys. Whereas I think you're right that the girls now are so much, in some cases, more users of the technology with the Facebooks and the communication mechanisms. That I think, you know, yes, the next generation, hopefully. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but hopefully we'd like to see more of the girls coming into the industry. But I think, like anything, the industry is going to change. I mean, what the industry looks like today is nothing like what it looked like 20 years ago. I mean, you guys were talking about, you know, your different PDA devices and palms. You know, I remember my palm, and it's nothing like, you know, the iPods in the iPhones you have today. You know, what's it going to look like in another 10, 20 years? Who knows?
Almost impossible to tell. I mean, you talk about 20 years, but even if we go back 5 years and you think forward 5 years, but with the generations coming up through the process, it's a question of making that leap from user of the technology to wanting to be more technically involved in the technology, and that's obviously the difficult step.
And look, hopefully as the girls are using the technology, they can actually see where they can add value and change it for the better. And I think that may be the opportunity where we see more girls coming into the industry, when they can see that they can actually influence and change the way that we use the technology.
That's a good point.
Sandrina, any young girls listening to this, either live to air tonight or on the podcast, what would you say to them if they had aspirations to become a tech guru?
Look, I think definitely give it a go. I mean, the worldliness of the industry, I think, is fantastic. Your ability to actually change and influence what's going on out there and around you, I think, is really second to none in terms of some of the other industries out there. And you don't have to be a technical geek or a nerd to be part of the IT industry. You know, yes, come in through the technical ranks, or come in through, you know, the graphic design, or come in through the marketing or other areas. It's a very dynamic, it's a very stimulating industry to be part of.
Just briefly, how long have you been in the industry for?
23 years, and that's showing my age.
Yeah. And you must have had lots of highs and probably a few lows, because that's what goes with anyone, regardless of sex in the industry. What's been some of the highlights in the tech world as you've come through in those past 23 years?
Gee, when I was technical back in, we're talking about now the late 80s, I got the opportunity to go and work in the UK, and I was, at the time, I was the European expert in the IBM technologies of OS2 and Office Vision, and I'm sure some of you gentlemen remember that. And it was brilliant because
they've all come to life here in the studio.
Well, OS2 is a fantastic technology, and I got to fly all over Europe and consult and talk to customers about OS2. I mean, that was definitely a highlight of the career. You know, just got to see so much of the world and got to meet some fantastic customers and get involved in some brilliant projects. So that's been a real highlight. And I'm loving what I do today. I love what I do at BMC. I mean, we've got some fabulous technologies, and we're really working in a leading segment of the industry around business service management. And I think what I love about it most is the fact that we're now seeing that IT is influencing the business. It's not just about IT anymore. It's about what we can actually do to improve our customers, organisations and their business. So that's always good.
Sandrina, thank you so much for talking with us this evening. It's been a real insight, and I personally hope we get to see more girls in the game, because it's very one-sided at the moment, and I think balance is everything.
That's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you're an A.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs. Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
That's a quick one. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron, Justin is in. Graham's in this evening. And we're discussing, or we have just been discussing, The lack of girls in the IT industry.
No, it's great having Sandrina on the program.
Yeah. Yes. It is a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Come on, girls, get into it. It's fun.
I used to work with a female C++ programmer.
She really?
Used to write rings around everybody else in the office. She was a bit of a gun with the code.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Few
and far between, though, as we're saying.
So you and I both used to know another C programmer, too.
Oh, did we? Who's that?
Yeah.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Do you remember?
Oh, yes. That's not who I was thinking of.
No, I know it wasn't.
That's right. Well, it's two I can think of in my entire...
In the programming field specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've come across a couple that do sort of tech work and help desk work and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, it's...
And IT training. In fact, my wife used to do IT training. Still does
IT training's an interesting field, isn't it? Yeah.
Maybe they're not as thin on the ground as anticipated. I think I remember calling one of the ISPs the other day and spoke to a first-level help desk, which was a lovely girl. She was very helpful. So,
talented trainers are worth their weight in gold as well, because if they can get the right information across...
And perhaps that's something that women can bring to the IT field that perhaps we do miss out on sometimes, is that connection between the people side of IT and the technology.
And I think what we're sort of alluding to before about the tech geekiness that perhaps the blokes are attracted to,
yep,
is in fact exactly the wrong thing to be instilling in a trainer, because you're trying to teach people that aren't tech savvy how to use stuff and be productive with it, rather than understanding the intricacies of why it works this way and not that way.
Or possibly just the ability even to see it from both sides of the fence. Mm. Yeah.
All right. Microsoft planning two critical fixes for the May update.
Oh, yes.
Patch Tuesday is nearly upon us very shortly.
Windows XP and Windows Vista.
Yes, Patch Tuesday comes around on the Wednesday following the second Tuesday of every month.
After the full moon.
In Australia.
Is that right? Now,
hang on, let me go outside and check.
It's most complex.
Have people forgotten about XP already? Because I noticed in one of the local newspaper quizzes the other day, one of the quiz questions was, what was the Windows operating system before Vista? And I'm thinking, hold on, it wasn't that long ago.
No, it's still used widely.
Was Vista an operating system, was it?
Apparently so.
Yeah.
I remember using Windows XP.
I was looking... I've still got a couple of machines on XP.
No, this is Windows 7.
Damn fine. At the office, we're still running XP on a couple of machines because a certain program that we use is not certified, which means there's no support if it's on Windows 7. Although that will all change very shortly. But I did notice
it's going to be a huge, huge deal when support for Windows XP finally runs out, which is still not a little while, still a little while off yet. But when critical updates, when security fixes stop coming out for Windows XP and it becomes unsafe to use it.
Have they announced a cessation date of friendliness? When it becomes hostile, it was 3 or 4 years away, wasn't it? It was a fair way.
Yeah, before that stage, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to check to be sure.
But, yes, a couple of critical fixes. Let me see. Jerry Bryant, Group Manager for Response Communications at Microsoft, said in a blog that both issues allow for remote access of code. This is in Windows 7 and Server 2008 Release 2. So if you're running any of those, make sure you do your updates very shortly, because you're going to get the opportunity for people to come in and remotely execute something if you come in through the weakest link, that is the web browser and stuff like that. So as I was saying before, Graham, there's a couple of major retailers still selling fairly high-performance machines with Windows XP on it.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So I don't think it's been forgotten just yet, despite the fact that JD seems to think that Quizmania has. The other thing too, have you all noticed that Google's web page results, search page results, has had a bit of an overhaul lately? There's a new little thing down the left-hand side.
Oh, well, I've read some over-the-top articles talking about why that might be, but yes, I have noticed, yes.
Oh, really?
They've added some options down the left-hand side.
Have they? They have?
Yes, they have.
But why is it over the top?
The articles I read suggested that it was in a direct response to making it look more like the Bing.
Oh, you think it's a competitive related?
Well, I don't
issue.
Actually. I think that's absolute nonsense. But that's what this article I was reading was trying to get to.
Well, John Wiley, the senior user experience designer at Google, said in a blog post that the new layout.
I love their job titles.
Senior
at Google.
User experience designer.
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
What do you do at Google? I'm a senior user experience designer.
Design user experience.
I used to be a junior one, but I worked my way up.
Yes. Mm. Did you know, this is completely off topic. I saw a program the other night on underpaid CEOs, and Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, is actually one of the most underpaid CEOs there is today. Come on, Eric. I walked past him when I was in Google. He was sitting in the caf. with his one of his colleagues.
But they do know evil.
They do know evil, that's correct, and as a result, they're underpaid. But I walk past him in the cafe, and Lydia's gone, there's Eric, where, look to your left, no, the other left. And there he was just sitting outside having a coffee in the Googleplex Mountain
View. We all looking for Ford if he's an underpaid CEO.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's probably got something coming in, you know, shares or something like that. But anyway, back to the new user experience. John Wiley, the position of which we've just spoken about, basically said it's rising expectations for search. They're trying to meet the efforts of an increasingly web-savvy user. I don't know. I've had no require to click any of those buttons on the left-hand side. Haven't you boys done that?
No.
I haven't yet.
If I search for something in Google now, like a communications company that's based in Hawthorne, and I get some results there in the main part of the web browser, and then on the left it says... I can expand it out so I can click on videos, images, news. So I don't...
Which are all the options we've had on the top of the screen.
That's right. And you are eventually going to run out of space if you keep on adding different types of media. So I can sort of understand why they've done that. But Graham's right. Yeah, if you're looking for a particular image, you could type that in and you'd get a heap of results. And then you click on the images link up the top. That was something that I've always done. It's a way that I've always used Google.
I think having navigation options or... other types of choices and information down the left-hand side of the screen is hardly a new innovation by Bing. So I don't think Google are following Bing in any way whatsoever.
Have you seen Bing Maps? Anyone?
No.
Now you're all going to go and search for Bing Maps, I can tell. It's funny, I was using the iPad the other day and using Google Maps, which you can pinch and use your hand and all that. The Bing Maps does nothing. It looks all right. It looks good. It's probably a really good use for a person with a mouse. But when you're using a multi-touch device, such as an iPad or an iPhone or something like that, it just
no good.
Doesn't do what the Google one does so well.
The one I use at work, which is this is a very Melbourne or Victoria-centric comment, so bear with us, everybody, for 30 seconds if you're listening outside of the city. Streetdirectory.com.au is a great one if you want to get a quick Melway reference.
Yeah.
Streets-directory.com.au.
Melway is a Melbourne-centric street directory.
Yeah, it's a Melbourne...
But they do Sidways, they do Brisways, they do all around the country now.
Yeah, you might find if you try it...
Yeah, but then they're not sort of so embedded in the society as the Melway is in Melbourne.
No, that's true.
The Melway is like really... It's like the Hills Hoist and everything else. It's really
In Melbourne.
Yeah, yes. That's part of the way
in Melbourne, if you give a street directory reference without saying what directory it in, people will grab the Melway and look at it.
Yeah, in Sydney, it's the UBD.
Queensland too.
In Sydney.
Now, interestingly, we're saying that Google is copying Bing in the way they've got their
Actually,
research.
I was disputing that they were, but yes.
Well, I noticed that Bing Maps is in beta. Now, isn't that copying Google with everything in beta?
Yeah, well, Google's been in beta for years, hasn't it?
So Bing Maps is in beta, I noticed.
I just searched for the phrase search engine on Bing.
And?
What did I come up with?
Top results, Google.
Go funny. Bing. Oh, dear.
No, Bing's saying to go to Google.
All right, other items.
Bing doesn't even appear on the first page of results.
Other items on the bar include, and we're talking about the new navigation bar on the left-hand side of the Google search, other items on the bar include the universal search option, which presents results from various Google search tools and search options customization services. In addition to the nav bar, the update includes a tweak to the search page's color palette, which Google says will provide a more modern look. I wonder who's been designing colours for them. The new design refreshes and streamlines the look, feel, and functionality of Google, making it easier to pinpoint what you're looking for. Do you think? I don't know. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But if it's going to separate all the video results and the JPEG results and the news results and things like that, maybe we'll get used to it, surely. Maybe it'll be really good. Maybe John would have done his job correctly and the user experience is good.
The senior user experience.
That's right, sorry. I omitted that. Can I talk about Telstra for a minute? I love talking, changing subject mid-track.
Telstra.
They had a huge problem in Queensland the other day. NextG fell off the face of the Queensland earth.
Where did NextG go to?
Telstra has confirmed that the users of its NextG mobile network were unable to receive signals in the entire state of Queensland.
Oh.
And apparently what happened was they did some work up there and put some dodgy gear in, and it didn't come up.
They did a dodgy firmware upgrade.
They did.
And they bricked their network.
They bricked their network. They'll have to roll back to 312, won't they?
Yes.
So they had to re-jailbreak next G, have they?
Apparently
yes.
So.
Apparently. Oh. Telstra customers in Queensland began reporting that phone calls were not connecting and SMS messages were not being sent from around 5:15 in the morning. Of which some mobile, this is what Telstra said, some mobile customers in Brisbane, Townsville and Sunshine Coast and other parts of Queensland may be experiencing technical difficulties. I don't think it was them. I think it was the network that was experiencing yes. technical difficulties. And Telstra was confident that they'd have the problem resolved. And unofficial reports claim that four of the Telstra's seven radio network controllers were experiencing faults.
Wow.
Whoopsies. But yes. Then again, this is technology. It can happen to anyone. It can happen to you or me at home if we don't back up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of time. And it can happen to the big boys when the one device that controls their network decides to not behave. And as a result, if you're in Queensland, next G, you didn't have no next G for some time for the day.
So the phones or the handsets just dropped back to GSM, did they?
Those that could, yeah, fell back to GSM. And those that couldn't, just, yes, no service.
Hmm.
All right, in other, because we're down at this end of the program, here was something that really caught my eye.
Are we in the mad minute?
No, well, sort of.
Almost.
This is just one of the bizarre things leading up to the odd spot of the week. A new dating site, apparently, online, restricted to Apple users. Now, I don't know what that says about Apple users or the mutually exclusive everybody else other than Apple users. But underneath this article, it says, ugly Windows and Linux users need not apply. But anyway, it's a Cupertino planning a new
what
dating...
Those of us who are attractive Windows users.
Well, yes. Cupertino are planning a new dating site that's been aimed exclusively at helping Apple fans get together. This is where Steve Jobs plans for a new master race. But anyway.
Now, you didn't say that properly. It's Cupertino.
Oh, Cupertino. Oh, yes, it is.
No.
It is Cupertino. JD. You're right. He's spot on.
Is it? Is it what it is?
Spot on.
Dear.
Not that I've looked at it already.
Cupertino.
not that you've got an account there or anything.
So if Apple's at one infinity loop, Cupertino, where do you reckon the dating service? No, or maybe we should not speculate about that. Ah, dear. Anyway.
You're listening to TikTok Radio.
Yes. Skype gets unlimited calling plans, changing the topic rather briefly. Skype has introduced a new monthly subscription plan, which extends its prepaid VoIP packages to landlines and mobile phones in 170 countries.
Cool.
I actually used Skype quite a bit when I was in the United States. It's terrific when you're out and about traveling the world. You can actually call home. At reasonable
you can take
rates.
A phone number with you that doesn't change no matter what country or what state you stand in.
That's right. If your handset can receive Skype calls, what you can do is just get a local number in the country from where you are and take it with you so your relatives and friends can call you for the cost of a local call.
Mm.
It just comes up on your Skype handset.
That's a good idea.
It's very good. It'll only cost you about $5 a month, I think it is, with Skype or something like that to get an in-dial number. It's very good. So they've opened up the skies a little bit. Skype they're now going to 170 countries.
Cool.
The new subscription offerings were launched last week, replacing Skype's previously unlimited plans. And they've grown from 34 countries in 2008 to 170 countries now. So well done, Skype. That's a good landmark to be in. What else has happened this week? Anything else that's really interesting? Well, let's talk a little bit about handset warranties.
We talked about this. The
any particular reason, Andrew?
No, not at all. Says he who is having now running on 313 pucker on his iPhone handset. But no,
did your iPhone break?
My iPhone, it ceased to function. It just stopped.
Bereft of life, it ceased to be.
It ceased to be. It would not even talk to the tunes of I.
If it wasn't nailed to the perch, it'd be.
Yes,
up
it wasn't. It was a very, very helpful Apple man at the local Apple shop, which, as I said, he knew the right way to hold it and the right keystrokes and the right.
Yeah, control open Apple reset, isn't it?
Open Apple reset. That's it.
That's it.
Spot on.
I couldn't find open Apple on the. Has it got open Apple?
No open Apple button on the iPhone.
There's only one. I couldn't find that one.
You can't take the battery out either. That's what you do on a normal phone when it gets into that
too
state.
Right.
You rip the back off and take the battery out.
Too right. You could blend it.
Oh, that'd fix it.
They do blend.
They do. Don't let the eye smoke out.
If you go to willitblend.com, you'll see evidence of that.
Yes.
Now, when you went into the Apple store, did the man look at you with scorn and disdain because you jailbroken your device?
No, I distracted him. I got my iPad out. Oh, look at that.
He said, look over here, look over here, look over here.
That's right.
Well, if it's not responding, then
he couldn't have told anyone.
He wouldn't have known it was jailbroken. You probably didn't tell him.
No, I didn't. He didn't ask. I didn't tell him. But anyway, it's all up and running again now on 313. Now, we're going to talk about iPhone getting special treatment on handset warranties. A court undertaking between Australia's ACCC and the Vodafone Hutchison Australia, basically they found a glaring exemption with Apple's iPhone. The ACCC announced late last month that the carriers offered handsets bundled with 24-month service plans would have to provide a warranty for the handsets for the full 24 months.
Excellent.
Yeah. Now, isn't that great? But there's one exemption.
We applauded that at the time.
There's one exemption.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. The iPhone is exempt from this.
Why is that? Because it's a computing device, not a phone.
Oh, look. All Apple iPhone handsets are exempt from VHAs. That's 3s and Hutchison's. 24-month warranty repair, which VHA actually confirmed in a statement. And obviously, they're sort of graying the water a little bit here and not sort of giving... They're doing the spin type sort of stuff, not giving direct answers and stuff like that. But I suspect you're right, JD. It's something to do with the fact that, well, it's Apple's problem, not our problem, and just because of the nature of the handset types or stuff. So beware if you do buy an iPhone, you miss out, like me, on a lot of extra warranties. Just take it back to your Apple shop. They're pretty good. They know what they're doing.
So what happened to yours? Why did you have to take it back? What state did it get into?
It got into a state of not booting up. The Apple logo would come up when you powered it up, and that was it. Then it would turn itself off.
Yeah, that's not...
Wasn't good.
Not the way it's
supposed
to work.
Wouldn't see iTunes, anything. I rang my helpline, JD, and he said, take it to the Apple shop. So, oh, it's that bad,
well,
is it?
We tried a few things, and it's like, well, if it's still a warranty...
Which it was.
The warranty.
Yeah. Which it was. Anyway, they fixed it. Tech Talk Radio, Odd Spot Gadget, website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering succotash, this has to be the best technology show on the internet, Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra have dropped the price of their prepaid broadband data too.
Buckle yourself in, hold on to your hemorrhoids.
Clayton Skype, the Skype you have when you're not having a Skype.
It's a real problem. It's a real problem.
Install Fring. Fring's great. Fring.
Now, if that's not a red rag to a bull in a china shop.
If it's in the cradle and it's all plugged in, that's fine.
Because I can stick things in its bottom.
Yeah, but
it's in the cradle.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Did you say gridiron cross-country wrestling or something?
Yeah, well, I don't know what that would... Yeah.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is Spring Design's Elix e-reader. That's the name of the device. For more information, go to springdesign.com. Devices like Apple's iPad have got an LED backlit screen, which aren't tailor-made for extended reading, and e-book readers are great for text, but they don't give you the same sort of sparkling display as mobile devices do. Well, Spring Design's new Elix e-reader gives you the best of both worlds. This e-reader has got two displays. It's got a large 6-inch EPD, electronic paper display, pane, which displays text like a printed page for a book or a newspaper, and a 3.5-inch touchscreen LCD beneath that one. Runs Google's Android operating system. It's got 256 meg of RAM, accommodates up to 2 gigabytes of flash memory, uses Wi-Fi to load documents, you can browse the web, check email on your Android client, read your books, read your newspapers, do whatever. It's available in charcoal or white, and retails for $399. That's our gadget of the week, Spring Design's Alex e-reader.
Here it is, everybody! The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Thank you to Musketeer on our forum.
Get ready to type, everyone. This is good.
Get ready to type.
This is excellent.
Remember Pandora, the music streaming service? Check this one out. Grooveshark.com.
Pardon me?
Grooveshark. G-R-O-O-V-E.
Grooveshark.
S-H-A-R-K.com.
Type.
All you need to do is type in an artist or a song title, click and listen. You can subscribe. Musketeer says he subscribed because he liked it so much. $36 for a year. Or you can use it for free and just get some pop-up ads on the side of your browser.
Well, put AdBlock Pro on your thing and you don't get them.
Andrew told me put AdBlock Pro in your browser. And
no ads.
You don't have to pay $36.
You can get AdBlock Pro now for your Chrome browser too.
Excellent. Yes, you can. That's our website of the week.
And it's a sensational one because I miss Pandora.
It needs flash.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Oh, so what, you can't use it on your iPad or anything like that? You just...
Oh, iPad, schmipad. Get onto this. Get onto Grooveshark. Come on, you know, no flash. This is, it's a good service and works well into Australia. Good bit rates. The music. The music
quality
sounds nice
was
and
excellent.
Clean.
I was listening to it tonight. Really, really nice.
Yeah. Thanks, so, Musketeer on the forum.
What?
Grooveshark.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Online dating website eharmony.com.au has released survey results which reveal...
We love a survey.
Contrary to popular belief, sex does not sell. A study of nearly 150,000 romantic hopefuls found friendship rates over the sins of the flesh. The survey reveals traits of friendship and chemistry.
What's this got to do with technology apart from the website?
Well, it's the eharmony.com. Oh, okay. It's electronic, right. online
dating
stuff.
Yes.
Not Cupid Tino.
Well, it's related to Cupid Tino and it's related to women in IT and it's all the...
Ties it all together,
doesn't
it?
It's the holistic nature of all things. 80% of respondents listed romance and physical closeness in their top 10 of wants. While sex appeal came in 19th most important, and physical attractiveness was trailing the others, ranked at 28. Both genders and all ages listed friendship and chemistry as their top two.
Fantastic.
Andrew, that's our Odd Spot.
That's our show for this evening. Thank you for being with us this evening, everybody. Thank you to...
thank you to Sandrina Branton from BMC Software.
That was excellent. Yes. Thank you, Sandrina, and Girls in IT. And we'll be back same time on the station that you're listening to right now, and we'll do it all again next week. Meanwhile, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McCollum, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop and Graham Callaghan. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is proudly sponsored by D-Link. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local radio station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.